I am going to fulfill your fondest expectations today. Ladies and gentlemen, as I combine Casual Friday with a throwback to the bunker days, as I light my Avanti Clint Eastwood style cigar, which I import from the States at less than a dollar a piece. And not only this, but I shall also tell you the role of the 144,000 in the kingdom. You have been looking forward to this, and I have as well. And I've kept you in suspense for too long, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to give it all to you today, because I'm going to just introduce you to it. And then next week, we're going to go into detail. But for now, I'm going to introduce it to you. But before I do that, you may not have noticed that I did not finish yet going over Ezekiel chapter 37. We're going to do that now, because there's a very important element at the end here. Element. What is that? There's a very important point at the end here that will segue me. And I didn't even know this was going to happen, but this is a beautiful segue into the role of the 144,000, because a very famous personage is about to be mentioned here in Ezekiel 37. Anybody know who it is? No, not Jezebel. Any more guesses? No. That Balaam's history. Forget him. I'm going to tell you right now. We left off in verse 22. And I have made them become one nation. And the divine split, the house of Israel from the house of Judah, is going to be healed. And God is going to bring them together again. I have made them to become one nation and land on mountains of Israel. No other land. Israel's not going to be in any other land other than Israel. I shouldn't even have to say that. And yet I feel that I do. One king is to them all for a king. Get ready. One king is to them all for a king. And they are no more as two nations, nor are they divided any more into two kingdoms again. This looks like a redundancy. Nor are they divided any more into two kingdoms again. It is a redundancy. It's a terrible redundancy. If Ezekiel had been a newspaper writer, this would have been edited, because it's a redundancy to say any more again. But the purpose of this is to comfort us to know that this division that we are experiencing now, separation from family, from friends, a death, divorce, whatever, is only going to happen once. We're not going through here again. We're not coming back. We passed this way but once. Jesus Christ only came once to the earth to be crucified. That horrible separation from God. Never again. God says, I'm never going to do that to you again. You went through it once. You're never going to have to go through it again. Boy, I've said that over and over again to God. I don't want to come back here. You've heard me say this. I'm only going to go through here once. And there's no such thing as reincarnation. You don't get second chances. You don't come back as a bug or a roach. Or Joel Osteen, God forbid. You only pass this way once, and the separations are never going to happen again. That's it. This is going to be done. All this pain and agony and these tears are going to be over for good. So I will never divide them anymore again. Because, my God, how many times has he, quote, unquote, screwed with Israel? How many times they were at the gate of the promised land, and he push them away. Well, they push themselves away, relatively speaking, because of unbelief. Likewise, in the book of Acts, they could accept their Messiah. Did they? So, that is so traumatic over and over again. Breaking after breaking. Break, heal, stronger, stronger, stronger. Break, break, break. Weak, weak. Ultimate healing. Extremely strong. That's it. We're not going to do that anymore. Never anymore again. He could have put three more redundancies in there, and I would have been happy. Verse 23, nor are they defiled anymore with their idols. So now we're not just talking about the physical separations. We're talking about the mental separations. That is, the worshiping of false gods. And that's not going to happen anymore. Nor are they defiled anymore with their idols and with their abominations and with any of their transgressions. That reminds me of when he said about them that he's going to remove their sin as far from them as the east is from the west. And that's a great promise for Israel. And here it is. He is going to do that, and it's never going to be brought back. Their abominations never brought back. No more remembrance of any of them, their abominations or their transgressions. And I have saved them out of all their dwellings in which they have sinned. The old, you know what? I could look at that as the human body too. He's going to deliver us out of our dwellings in which we sin. It may be referring to their literal homes. I don't know. But I look at that as this temporary vessel, this temporary tabernacle that we inhabit. And we're not going to be brought back here again into these bodies. We're going to have new bodies. So never again will we have an opportunity to sin. We sin because these bodies are mortal. Death passed on to us from Adam, and we sin because we're dying. When God takes away mortality, that will be impossible for us to sin. I need to take a breather from that. Hang on. Because that was pretty good. I saved them from their transgression, from out of their dwellings in which they have sinned, and I have cleansed them, and they have been to me for a people. We go beyond this even now. We're seeing now a forgiveness of Israel. We're seeing a letting away of their sins, and we're seeing making them clean. And the reason God doesn't condemn them in the thousand years is because they're doing law. We come into justification. So we're as good as dead. Our old humanity is, and God now sees us as a new creation. I just want to show you the difference between us and them. And I've cleansed them, and they have been to me a people, and I to them a God. And my servant David, there it is, verse 24. My servant David is king over them. You say, well, I thought Jesus Christ was king. Well, he is the ultimate king and the ultimate priest. But he doesn't have to be physically in the city of Jerusalem during the millennium in order to operate. Now, because people have asked me, well, how can Jesus be on the earth and heaven simultaneously? Because he's a being, he has a GPS location. And the reason is that he has representatives. And David is his representative king on the earth. And my servant David is king over them. One shepherd have they all, and in my judgments they go. And my statutes they keep and have done them. Well, even if you say one king, one shepherd, well, Jesus can be the one king, the one shepherd, but David is so perfect in his stead that he is referred to as the king. He could be the one king, even as Christ is the one king. It's the same as God having an image, Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is such a perfect image of God that we can look at Jesus Christ and say he is God. He's not God identificationally, actually, but he's God representationally. He represents God, you see. And so David is going to perfectly represent Jesus Christ in Israel. And David is going to rise from the dead. And that's going to be an exciting day. And they dwell in their own land. I give to my servant, to Jacob, in which your fathers have dwelt. And they will dwell on it, and their sons' sons, unto the age. And David, my servant, is the prince to the age. Beautiful. David is a servant to the age. At least Young's literal gets it right here. The Concordance says to the eon. The King James says forever, which is ridiculous because there will not be an eternal kinghood or an eternal priesthood because God is going to be all in all, and in which case rule and those ruled over will be abolished. That's a good thing. And we've got three more verses here. And I have made to them a covenant of peace, a covenant age-during, age-abiding, that is. I like Young's here. The Concordant would say, what would the Concordant? Aeonian. And it is with them. This is the thousand years. It's age enduring. And I have placed them and multiplied them and placed my sanctuary in their midst to the age. Not for eternity. My goodness, no, people. It's not going to be an eternal temple where there's going to be the necessity of an eternal priesthood. That would be an insult to God to say that there's always going to have to be this go-between. That's not the case. And my tabernacle has been over them, and I've been to them for God. They have been to me for a people. And known have the nations that I, Yahweh, am sanctifying Israel. Can't wait for that day when the nations know. In my sanctuary, being in their midst to the age. There's an exclamation point. At verse 28, the last verse of Ezekiel 37. To the age. I think of Buzz Lightyear. To infinity and beyond, which is ridiculous. Buzz Lightyear must be reading the KJV because there's no such thing as eternity, infinity and beyond. And there's no such thing as eternity and a day. And the King James, of course, botches the eon for the eon. We've been all through that. Now, David is the king in Israel. And in Israel, even in the old days, there was a hierarchy. There was the high priest and there were other priests. And then there were ministers that ministered in the temple. And they managed things like the pots, the instruments, the vessels of the temple. There were singers. There were lyre players. They're probably liars, too. They lied about their lyre playing. And there were... There was a hierarchy, a caste system. God always operates that way. Even in the early ecclesias in the body of Christ, there were supervisors, right? And there weren't kings, but... Boy, there were supervisors and elders, things of that nature. And we saw that at the throne of God. We see God, Christ, the 24 elders, and the animals. And then there are a bunch of... angels worshiping, a bunch of. That's a technical term. I don't want to get you too confused, which is why I prefer to say bunch of. I would blow you away with a technical term, and I don't want to do that. But in Ephesians chapter 6, we have a hierarchy of spiritual beings, sovereignties, authorities, world mights among the celestials. Below that, we have cherubim. I think they're below that, not sure. And of course, the angels, which are the messengers. They're the lowest form on the spiritual hierarchy. Likewise, on the earth, during the kingdom, we have a spiritual hierarchy. David is the king. Wait a minute. Wait for it. I know this cigar is distracting, but I had to do that today. My sister will write me and say, quit smoking those cigars. They're so distracting. I know, Kelly, they are. But... I'm not even doing it once a week now. It used to be a weekly occurrence in the bunker. But Jesus Christ will be king and priest, but David is his representative on earth. And beneath David are the 12 apostles. Now, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are there somewhere. David is the king. So I think Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob probably will be under David. And then under Abraham, so there's Christ, David, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 apostles. The 12 apostles. Remember when Peter said, what's going to come of us? We followed you. We've given up everything. You're going to be seated on one of 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So the 12 apostles will be judges of the 12 tribes. You see 12 there? Okay. So now the 144,000, this is just to finally tell you and to whet your appetite for more details next week. They will administer the kingdom. They will be the representatives, like the, what do you call it in the United States government? House of Representatives, I guess. They will go to their constituents. They will be the ones that actually administer the hands-on kingdom. They will go out from Jerusalem, which is the governmental capital. That's the capital of the world, Jerusalem. Not Babylon anymore. Babylon is always the capital of the crapped-up world. Jerusalem will be the capital of the good world. It never has been the capital of anything, but it's going to be the capital of the good world. And from there, the government will fare forth, and the law will go out. And we know that the law comes from a rod of iron. And who will administer that rod of iron? The 144,000. They will be delegates, if you will, that will hands-on administer the wishes of the government in Jerusalem. So it comes down to hierarchy. Don't you love how practical this is? Now, here's an exciting thought for you to think about over the weekend, but I'm not going to give this to you without a huge draw on my cigar. You don't inhale these things, by the way. My God, no. You don't inhale them. You just let it sit there and just blow the smoke out. Because it's fun. I kind of like watching the smoke. That's why I'm looking at myself on the studio cam. Okay, you'll be delivered to this next week. No cigars next week. But listen to this. Paul, I believe, this is just me. Paul is the David of the celestial kingdom. Paul is numero uno in the celestial kingdom under Christ. There's Christ and David on the earth. In heaven, there's Christ and Paul. And you know what? He suffered for it. He suffered more than any of us have suffered. He's going to be the captain. He's going to be giving us our marching orders in the celestial realm. He is going to be rallying the troops, and he is going to be sending us like a general, like Patton, sending us throughout the universe as the 144,000 are going throughout the earth. We are going to be sent to administer God's celestial wishes from the headquarters in the heavens, which may be a celestial Jerusalem. Don't know. Don't write that down. Don't quote me on that. But there is a celestial capital. You can bet that. And it's going to make Jerusalem look like Winbur, Pennsylvania. And when we see our home, when we see the headquarters, we're going to thrill. Some of us maybe will be working in that headquarters, but many of us will be sent out by our general, the Apostle Paul, who is acting under the authority of Jesus Christ. Paul for the celestials, David for the earth, the 144,000 for the earth. You and me, can you imagine that? You and me for the celestials, taking the government of God to the farthest reaches of the universe.